Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the podcast that is using Zoom for the first time since watching the Zoom horror film Host over the week, in which loads of people go on a Zoom call and get murdered. So is slightly terrified to open Zoom. That's just me, though. I am joined, as ever.
That bodes very well by me, Will Owen, to finish the sentence.
Yeah, who hopefully will be the first one murdered. And also joining me, you are my brother. We're joined by two other brothers from the Draft Rugby podcast, Harry and Nelson Dale.
I there's no minorities here, boys, so surely the bald guy gets murdered first. That's what I'm thinking.
That's true. That's a good point. Okay.
It's a hell of a way to introduce guests on your podcast by saying, I hope you get murdered second.
And third.
Okay. No, good. I'm very willing to go. Like, I'm the shock death in the middle. You know, like, I'm like Drew Barrymore in Scream. Like, I'm introduced and you think I'm going to last it out, but no, I'm a goner right away.
Here we go.
Yeah. Nelson's crippled anyway, so he's got no chance.
I'm a pretty slow runner at the moment.
Forget at the moment. Me and Robbie are both just slow runners generally, so.
Yeah. And lockdown has helped.
Yeah.
How are you doing? How are we both?
Yeah, very, very good. Thanks, mate. End of a pretty crazy day for me, actually, which is the first day in about a year that I've had just doing nothing during the week. So it's been pretty excellent. Nice. A meeting a couple of hours before this, but that was over a couple of beers, so definitely can't complain.
I'm the exact opposite. I haven't been home yet, so it's been 14 hours since I've left for work. So this is the highlight of the day for sure.
Wow,
that's great. And it's good hearing that a couple of beers have happened already, because over here obviously it's 11 a.m. So that's very refreshing to hear at this point.
Weatherspoons are officially open now. Yeah. Across the land, that's what I'm hearing. 11 a.m. So the idea today, the game we are nominally covering, is Australia's 68-22 win back in 2011 over Russia. I think this game is best remembered for one thing, which is the fact that Radiki Samo, aged 36, played on the wing for the first time since 1999.
Yeah, it's been 12 years, and he, at that age, 35, 36, whatever he was, he still had enough pace, I reckon. Harry was talking junk about him like 5 minutes ago. But I think for a man that's clearly not a winger, and he could have been in a wheelchair almost with how old he is, I think he did well.
You know what? He was actually young for the game. Grachev, I think his name was, one of the flankers for Russia, was actually 38, the oldest man at the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
So he's just a young buck. He's still had a couple of years to go on him.
Yeah. And I think, I can't remember if it was Grachev or Grachev. One of the, because they've annoyingly got the basically the same name.
Yeah.
I believe one of those two is capped in the back, so I'm hoping it's Grachev. And if we could have had a Samo versus Grachev number 8 battle on the wing, that would have been a perfect setup for this test match.
Absolutely.
It's Eddie Jones talking about hybrid players well ahead of the game, Radiki Samo and Grachev,
Definitely.
And, like, the other thing about this game is he causes so much chaos the moment he gets the ball every single time, because no one is expecting to tackle a number 8 out on the wing.
And he just is willing to throw one arm offload. If he hits the ground, he's still looking for the pass. Like, the ball is always alive with him, and that was exciting to see.
He dead set locks his thumb between his fingers around the ball because his hand is so big. So if someone tries to palm him, he just holds one hand out and he can throw the ball anywhere. It's impossible to tackle him. Of course he creates chaos.
I think that's a good place to sort of start on. I know it wasn't the first try, but to be fair, his first touch of the ball, he makes a break down the wing, and it sets up the first try for Berrick Barnes. But then there's the one that you alluded to a minute ago, where he throws a kind of American football style pass over the top to, I think it's Nathan Sharp, maybe running a line to help him out, or Higginbotham. And there's a load of offloads, and it's Quade Cooper gets the ball in space and offloads to Ben McCowman when he doesn't need to. He would have scored himself, but it makes the try look like 1% nicer, doesn't it?
You're talking, you massively undersold that try.
Yeah, haven't I?
And because, I mean, I think it's their third try. It comes right after they score a really incredible try with Drew Mitchell, where they make Luke Burgess makes a lovely break from the 22, and then he's brought down about halfway. They recycle it, and Barrett Barnes does an immediate cross kick to Mitchell, who scores. And it's such a nice, well worked try. And almost from the kickoff, Australia run this passage where they're just offloading every ball. It's probably like slingshot offload after offload.
Yeah.
Until, as you say, Quade Cooper's. Sorry, go on.
It was champagne rugby to start for sure. Yeah. And I think they just knew that the Russian fullback never seemed to be in place at the back. So they were willing to kick it in. And they were willing to just throw the ball from left wing to right wing. Didn't have to make contact with anyone in the middle. They're throwing four or five passes, half of them offloads.
That was the point, that try that you're talking about, where I was really. Saluting Squidge for asking us to talk about this game, because there's a lot of games we could have gone back to in the Wallabies last 10 years and not enjoyed ourselves at all, but you picked the perfect one for us. Die hard fans, and we just have rose-coloured glasses now. I'm pretty sure we won that World Cup.
Yeah.
I thought it was Wales won that World Cup.
It was a great final either way, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Let's not talk about third-place playoffs.
No.
It was one of those teams for the Wallabies. It had been a long time since I'd looked at this side. And obviously, we got Jock, James O'Connor, and a few other guys sort of popping up and still around. But that team, that class that was in that Wallabies side, it just had a little too much flair, potentially. Like, they just needed to settle down at times. Quade gets a bit excited, does a few silly things. Mm. James O'Connor started this game brilliantly, and then in that second half just dropped the ball four or five times every time he went into contact. But just every single person in that back line could have broken the line open at any point.
Yeah. And I think whilst we've watched this World Cup the whole way through, of course, we've probably concluded that Australia were probably the best attacking team at this World Cup. And regardless of what back line they put out, you've got the likes of Digby Ioane, who were yet to come back into them, Pat McCabe, who had a fairly good World Cup, as it turned out, still yet to come back into this team. And on the bench here, you see Will Genya and Nick Phibbs, two scrum halves covering the entire back line. It doesn't really matter who's playing where.
Yeah,
it really was that good. But the team there was so exciting to watch. But I actually thought this is probably my favourite back line they put out of the World Cup. I was looking through their team list for the other games as well. The partnership of Berrick Barnes and Adam Ashley Cooper in the centre was just absolute class. They're two of my favourite centres running around, and I just thought it was so much stronger than what we put out in the other games. Russia was obviously the game that Wallabies targeted.
That was the big one. That was the biggie. The Berrick Barnes is often sort of remembered almost as a joke. I don't quite get why there's a lot of people don't remember as being as really, really good as he was.
Yeah, I think it's probably because he had that. To be honest, I think the start of his career was a little bit slow, where I think he underachieved a little bit, and he probably got higher honours than maybe he should have early on. And then he was always stuck behind Quade Cooper, and I don't think he probably ever solidified a spot at test level. But he was so solid. He was rock solid defensively, made good decisions, good kicker of the ball, good passer. I actually thought in this game he was the perfect foil for Quade Cooper, and probably could have played a lot more test rugby than he actually did.
Yeah. Yeah. It amazes me thinking that they picked Anthony Faenga over him for most of this World Cup. We've looked at Anthony Faenga, and we've discussed on previous episodes that we previously remembered him as being all right. Not amazing, but all right. And he's been really shit in all the games that we've watched.
I think Anthony Faenga probably got selected based off his combination with Quade Cooper and Will Genya, and they were overcompensating for Quade Cooper's not perceived actual lack of defensive capability. So I think that was Faenga's biggest strength, and I think that's probably why we saw him.
I think it's going off on a tangent.
Go for it.
Quade Cooper definitely wasn't the worst defender at 10 in this match. Yuri Kushnarov. I looked up turnstiles in Russian, and it's Turnket. I butchered it, but he is definitely the Russian Turnket.
It is a bit, isn't it? Because I mean, like, Kushnarev was, he looks like a fly half. You know, you look at him, he's just kind of like very authoritative looking figure. He's got like the fly off haircut. He kicks a couple of times. And you kind of go, oh, was that why he was at 10? You know, he just looked the part. He just turned up to training and they went, yeah, right, you can play 10, you know.
I'm pretty sure, was it the commentators were going, he's a really good attacker and that's why he's here. Did someone see him attack well? Like,
I don't think they had the ball in the first half, to be fair.
That's fair. See, yeah. But
let's bear in mind as well that there were three Russian tries in this game. One of them was scored by the replacement fly half, Rashkov. And another one of them was assisted by Quade Cooper rather than Kushnarev. So...
Yeah, he still, I think Quade was probably the second best fly half in this match, and Rashkov was the best. Like, how is that the biggest margin team's been losing, and someone just chucks out a drop goal? Like, you'd been on the field for 2 minutes, and he just goes, nah, I'll get some points on the board.
I was wondering if it's a Felipe Contepomi moment, and it was like, I don't know if you remember a few years ago for Stad, Contepomi's team were 4 points behind, and he dropped a goal thinking he'd won the match for them. Because he just didn't know the score.
I think it was more of a Matt Dunning.
I wonder if it's like, no, I was wondering if it's like that. Like he hasn't quite got the measure of the game because he's just come on, and he thinks, despite it being 33-5, that this is going to put Russia ahead.
I was going to ask,
he scored the world's first 30-point drop goal.
Are you two familiar with a Fletch and Hindy sketch of the Australia versus Russia rugby league match from 2000, the 2000 Rugby League World Cup? And basically, the sketch is that Australia go about 100 points up, and then there's somebody pretending to be one of the Australian sort of captains or vice-captains or whatever, and says, oh, and Russia really came back at us. They came back and they made 3 tackles in a row, and they were doing really, really well. And then basically he says, then there was the worst moment of my rugby league career. And he trips up one of the Russian attackers, and Russia go for goal when they're about 90 points down, and he misses it between the posts. And he's saying, oh, I was so relieved. They nearly closed the gap to 86 points.
Oh, no.
It was like the best kicker in all of Russia. Yeah. Which Russia didn't even have on here. Actually, I don't know. Kushnarev was probably the better goal kicker, which is not what this game required.
To be fair, coming into this game, you know, the commentators were saying Russia had already scored 3 tries against Italy, 2 tries against Ireland. I had in my head the current Australian side that scores 1 try a game. I thought we were really up against it. So maybe they were thinking the same kind of thing. The attacking fly half was going to give them a real chance.
You got to keep those points ticking over.
It's worth noting, this is the most tries Australia conceded in the entire World Cup.
That's crazy.
They conceded 2 against the All Blacks and Wales. They conceded none against Ireland. They conceded 1 against the USA. And then 3 against Russia. Do you remember that? Do you remember when Australia could defend? That's maybe harsh on the last few months, but...
Yeah. No, I think we...
It was 1991, wasn't it?
Yeah, probably
a bit. We were talking about records, so I'll give you this one now. We're looking at the, you know, at halftime, I think it was 45-5. And I was thinking, I hadn't looked at the score before the game. You know, I wanted to make sure it was still up in the air for me. And I was thinking, geez, this could be a 90-point win. This is going to be absolutely massive. And of course, it didn't quite play out like that. And we'll get to that. But it got me thinking of what was the biggest win that Australia's ever had over another nation?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically Wales.
And,
oh, no. I think that.
Anyway, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in and listening.
The year of the 1991, I'm not going to stop. Rugby World Cup. In the warm-up to the World Cup, Australia got up by 57 points and over Wales, and then played them in the actual World Cup as well and beat them by another 35. So they managed to get up by 92 points over Wales in 2 games. It's just absolutely amazing. So there's a great stat that I know you guys will never forget.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. I'm very glad to hear that.
And I imagine Wales's greatest victory over Australia was like 18-15 or something.
No, I think they won by 24.
25 points.
25.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. That's all right.
Yeah.
But you say that like beating Wales in the 90s was hard. you won two World Cups in that time. I think we won 2 games.
Well, look, we've just got to hold on to everything we can at the moment, all right, in Australia. So,
hey, I know the feeling.
How? Yeah, we're both got to beat each other down when we get the chance.
From the other end, then, how are you feeling about that World Cup draw?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So the Fijians.
I think it's just the same. Do they actually do a draw anymore, or do they just refresh the page and it just goes to the next 4 years cycle? Who says like that? Yeah.
But like when they were drawing the last team for that pool and you saw Australia Fiji together, I was sort of laughing to myself, it's going to happen. But I didn't think it could possibly happen again. But
it's ridiculous.
What is it? Yeah, like 4 of the last 5 World Cups, Australia, Wales and Fiji have been in the same
and
pool.
And it's likely we're going to get Georgia again. And it's possible we'll get Uruguay again.
So it'll be the exact same pool as last
time. I don't know about your thoughts on this, boys, but is it time we have 14 pools? Because then, I mean, we can't have all three of those together. If that's not a reason, I don't know what else is.
Look, what I want is a 20-pool World Cup with 20 teams. Yes. So that way Wales will always get out the pools and they've never got to play Fiji in them.
Ireland will still go out in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
There is that. Ireland will draw either France or the All Blacks in the quarterfinals to get out of the group. So good luck there, boys.
Yeah, that's not fun.
The curse continues. 10 World Cups in a row now. No, sorry, 9 out of 10 they went out of the pools once. Never mind. Oh, well, sorry, Ireland. We're looking at 2011, and it is remarkable mostly for being the only World Cup where Wales and Australia weren't in the same pool, I think, ever.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. It brings up that other point, which is why are we drawing the pools now?
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense.
And I get that rugby knows it's got a big enough audience to sell tickets, but it needs longer than, you know, a football World Cup would. But 3 years feels like a long time. You know, tickets go on sale next March, which is a long time to be selling them for, to see how quickly they sell.
But I mean, you look at recent years and almost like recent World Cups and pretty much every ticket sold. Like, we don't need to be that desperate. People in those countries will buy tickets, and there's some people that will go to everyone will buy tickets, and there'll still be tons of tickets left, you know, 12, 18 months later.
Do you reckon it's one of those things where people just kind of think, well, I've seen Wales versus Fiji before, so I'm not going to bother doing that this time? Like, I've seen Australia beating Wales plenty of times, you know, I don't need to do it again, do I?
Everyone's waiting for Fiji to beat both of us at the next World Cup.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
They're going to take a scalp, I think. I'd put my money on it. They've just been getting so close.
Is Semi Radradra too old to play in that World Cup? Has anyone
heard
of him?
No, he's like 28 or something.
I reckon he's probably 28 or so.
Yeah, and Tuasova would be like similar, 27, something like that. Yeah. They've still got weapons. Vinny Bolivola still, if they need a 10.
Yeah. They've got a good backline going into then, and I can only imagine who's currently sizzling on the seven circuit that they're going to pull in within the next 3 years.
Oh, exactly. That flanker they pulled out of nowhere, who was homeless a few months ago, like spent lockdown on the streets, and then was pulled in, wins his first cap, is incredible against Georgia. And you're going, okay, they've got so many of these boys. They've got so many phenomenal.
They literally found else wants, a world class player on the streets.
Yeah.
Well, we see it firsthand. We invited them to come and play in our domestic competition, and the Fiji drew are like 2 years in, 3 years in, have won the entire competition, didn't they?
Yeah, and they're
just way too good.
You're talking just non-professional players that are living in Fiji, scooped them up, put them in a team together, and they're turning up and just
second place, third year, they win the whole thing.
And dominating teams with like Quade Cooper running around and stuff like that, and they're still winning.
Did you see the clip on Twitter this morning? So they had a meeting for like the high performance unit of Fijians, whatever. And they asked afterwards if they could go out and play despite it really pissing it down with rain. And it was like horrible conditions, horrendously muddy pitch. And they look like that bloody Australia Scott Higgins, no, Ben McCalman try. Like, they're just all throwing these miracle offloads out of nowhere, despite the fact that you probably can't see the person 2 yards away from you. Like, it looked like West Wales. Like, it was awful conditions. And yet, there they are, just chucking it about. And they just asked to do that after a meeting. They'd asked to go out and play.
It's ridiculous. And it's like a couple of hours away from a typhoon or whatever it is that's cycling that's coming.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
It is that bad weather. It's not bad rain. It is typhoon territory. And this ain't the worst they've had in a long time.
Yeah,
and there's just clip after clip of them playing in the water and kids playing in the water and flicking the footy around. It's awesome to see.
And I think, look, when you get that in the UK, everybody in the team's going, oh, shotgun, not playing fullback. Whereas I imagine they were all saying, oh, yeah, put me in the back three, coach.
For sure.
That is, yeah, the worst possible conditions. But I think it's that kind of, like, sheer love of the game that pulls them through. I don't know how we're talking about Fiji, but it's fate, isn't it?
Like,
you put Welsh and Australians together and the Fijians will manifest like Beetlejuice. They'll just appear in the corner.
Yeah, there's a chat about rugby there, especially if it's World Cup related.
Yeah. Oh, that's the ghost in this Zoom call. You know, it's not coming to kill us, it's coming to beat us in World Cup. It's the Fijian ghost.
The ghost of World Cup past.
Yes. It is Christmas.
I'm getting a massive deja vu here.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was you talking about a ghost in one of our pods or something like that. It was Fiji, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, maybe. That rings a bell. Okay, I was going to say, speaking of bells, Angus Bell wasn't playing in this game. However, there was a moment I picked up on commentary where the commentator said during the first scrum of the game, now a lot is expected of this young prop James Slipper, which I can't picture James Slipper ever being young. I think he was like James Slipper, and then Rob Simmons comes off the bench as another youngster.
Yeah.
To me, both of them were always at least 29, and
I
always
think
just
Rob
had
Simmons
a, had
has been
like
29 for about 10 years, hasn't he?
I think so, and he has never been able to catch a football, has he? Or hold on to it.
Oh, watching that second half where he just dives and knocks the ball on, it was just like, that was my one takeaway from him, his performance in this game, just him knocking the ball on again. It's just, I don't know, Captain Mud since 2011.
Yeah, that guy is definitely a wet pillar.
But he's kind of, Rob Simmons has always been there because he's a good line-out option, you know. And it's one of those things that there are some players who in some countries or teams will get a disproportionately great career because they have one asset.
I'll go one step further. It's not just that. It's Australia's distinct lack of any other options at any point over the last decade. He's a solid enough line-out operator, and he's definitely the best in Australia at the moment and has been for a few years. But if anyone was half decent, they would have just taken his role and he would never have been picked. And the thing was, any time anyone threatened, they left for the Northern Hemisphere and we never saw them again.
Yeah,
there are three or four blokes at the moment that would be so far ahead of him, and they're nowhere to be seen in Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, I mean the Arnolds, who have then,
Coleman, Rodder, Skelton,
even,
Fardy's pretty old, but we'll take him.
Yeah, he's still very good for Leinster despite his age. So
he's got to be 37 or something.
Probably.
Yeah, I think he's like 35. I don't know, I should maybe do DNA tests on that hat I stole from him.
Yes, of course.
Which is a story I've told in the Never After This podcast. But yeah, I once stole a hat from Scott Fardy.
Which I got for Christmas last year from him. So.
Yes.
Ooh, wow, good present.
It didn't cost me a penny, but it cost me almost my life. So I think that's the trade-off.
Yeah, it's worth the risk.
Should we talk about some of the other Australian tries?
Because sure.
You kind of mentioned
let's talk David
McCalman
Pocock.
One. Let's talk David Pocock, my favourite topic.
Please.
Yeah.
Please.
So there's as you mentioned earlier, there was a suspect one where David Pocock just off a fairly standard line-out move runs into Yuri Kushnereff expecting to be tackled, and instead Yuri Kushnereff ends up in row Z, and Pocock just. The thing is, you can see Pocock coming out the other end of that tackle, not expecting to keep running. And it's kind of like, oh, no, usually I would go down and be tackled at this point. But sure, if you want me to score the try, I will.
He had funny thing about Pocock that I think we always forgot was before Hooper came into the Brumby system, Pocock had the fastest 40-metre sprint time that team had ever had.
Wow.
So he's actually a bit of a mover, and he could actually play in attack a little bit as well. Obviously, he was just such an absolute menace in defense that you didn't see him run the ball too much. But I wouldn't want to tackle the bloke. Look at the size of him. He's probably Adonis.
Scary, man.
Yeah.
Then, but he also got his other try. He got two tries in that first half. Mm. He probably could have had a third.
Mm.
You know, like if he really wanted it, I reckon he could have had that.
I think it was very unselfish, that offload he did to Stephen Moore for that try.
No one has ever described him as selfish, I reckon.
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's all the work he's done for charities and stuff. And don't you hate how he's not only really good in the breakdown, he's also really good in attack, and he's a really good bloke, and he's handsome as fuck. Like, I hate him.
Oh, he would have a schlong on him as well. He would be dead. Just, it would swing.
I think you can actually see it. You know, I wrote a piece for Blood and Mud, like, way back when Israel Folau sent that first tweet, about how I reckon it was just being in the changing room with David Pocock that gave Israel Folau feelings he wasn't comfortable with, and that was why he swung in that direction, why he took that drastic turn out of nowhere to being a massive homophobe.
Hang on, Robbie, can we just have a quick word? Your ears for a second. Do you think they've heard the other episodes of the podcast where we're talking about David Pocock schlong?
Oh, you mean the David Pocock Schlong retrospective podcast?
Yeah. You know, the other like 33 episodes of this podcast we've done where we talk about David Pocock Schlong. Yeah,
because we don't talk about anything else. No. And I thought we might do this one on rugby.
Yeah.
But I think we're back to David Pocock Schlong.
All right, guys, turn your mics back on. Turn your cameras back on. You can listen to us again. Yeah, David Pocock, what a rugby player he is.
What a schlong. No, what a good...
Breakdown operator, that's the one. Good.
You reckon he was so good at holding his weight over the ball because he had a tripod? So he had an extra point of contact.
He had a perfectly balanced... Like, you couldn't knock him off because it was like a pendulum just keeping him in place at all times.
It all makes sense.
Speaking of Pocock, how about him getting selected at 6 for the team of the decade?
Yeah.
Oh, where has that been published through? Is that as an open side or a blind side?
He's down as a blind side. But I don't know if they just did it as a...
Was McCall playing 7?
Yeah, McCall at 7.
Yeah, but you know how some nations, they swap them around. And I feel like McCall's more of a 6 than Pocock.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not an Argentinian post, and there's not enough South Africans for it to be a South African post. So they're the only two that put 6 as their open side flanker.
Yeah. All I'm saying,
France play left and right.
All I'm saying is Ned Hannigan was robbed.
Surely Ned Hannigan and Simmons.
You've brought up an emotive topic, I think, for everyone involved here. What if Ned Hannigan's the ghost? Just a massive floaty lamppost ghost.
A very luscious lamppost mop on the top of his head.
And then there's players in every nation where they can do whatever they like on a football field, and they can play as well as they possibly can, like Ted Flanagan did a few games into this international season, and you still know with 100% confidence that he's never going to make it at international level.
Yes.
He's just one of those guys.
I think there's something in, and I do feel for him to a certain degree, the fact that he's called Ned and he has that haircut.
He can get a haircut, though. Right?
Yeah. And he did briefly, and it didn't work. I still didn't believe it. I still looked at him and went, No. You're still a man. You're still a massive bloke called Ned. Who, I mean, can you, like, school must have been hard for him, even though he was that tall. Like, I don't know why. He has that energy of someone that was easily picked on in school.
He does look like he was bullied, and it doesn't come out well enough in his rugby. He's not an aggressive man. Like,
no.
It's not like he's trying to make up for it. He's like, yeah, so what? I have a mop on my head. Enjoy it. That's all it is. He's not angry enough.
You always have to respect the level of confidence with nothing to back it up.
I don't think it is. I think he's kind of like, he has the energy of someone who was bullied mercilessly in school, but didn't notice and hung around with the bullies anyway. Of, like, he just thought they were his friend, and it was like a bit of, you know, jibing and, hey, boys will be boys.
I don't know how much you guys see the media over here between the games, but Ned Hannigan was like on the front foot all season this year going, oh, you know, we're going to be so physical this week. I'm just thinking, when? Like, when have you ever been physical? You've never knocked someone off a breakdown. Like, you do not do physicality.
Remember that break he made against the All Blacks and he looked so confused? It was, you know, that break of that clip of like a giraffe running through open pastures and just looking around with its neck kind of swaying side to side violently. It looked a bit like that.
In his head, you were just, I'm sure everyone could have, if you could have thought or heard what he was thinking, it would have been, help, help, someone help me. Like, he just did not know what to do and he just wanted to throw it to someone.
And he just chucked it to Hooper, didn't he? Because he was like, you've done this before.
Yeah, you're more qualified for this than I am.
And he... All he probably had to do was hold up for a few more steps and draw in a play. Instead, he just threw it early. And
so that was the greatest game he's ever played and ever will play. So I don't want to rag on him too much for that one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Right. I think it's about time we move on to the most important bit of this match. The bit that we've all come for is the point when, 5 metres out from the Australian line, Russia get a penalty. And not only do they just tap and go or whatever, but they set up the old school high school wall move where they set up three forwards and then a couple of people in behind in case they want to run it through. They get the nine to loop round and set off the backs off there and improvise. And I'm sure most people who are listening to this have seen some variation of this before if they've ever played rugby in school. And as you just sort of gestured a minute ago, they did this twice at international level in the World Cup. And I love that.
No. But they do it once 5 metres out and you can kind of, you know, you can kind of go with that because there is an argument for 5 metres out. Just give it to your biggest bloke and let him run into them. Especially if they've got Yuri Kushnerev on the other side.
Yeah, I love the lack of deception as well. That they just go, straight to Korshnov in the middle. It'll bosh it up.
Wait a minute, no, Kushnerev was playing for them. He swapped sides. It's like they've gone full high school rugby and they've just gone, right, you're one short. We're putting one of our guys on your side, the one we don't want. No, but then also 40 metres out, they try it again.
Yes.
Why would you do that 40 metres from the try line?
Give it to your big fat second row and see if he can run through.
Yeah.
I think they'd come to realise, like they'd gone a bunch of times, especially a little bit earlier on, they'd kicked it to the line, go, okay, we'll do a driving maul here, and just got demolished. And that first time they did it, they did get demolished, but they got another penalty. And they went, oh, do we back ourselves to do that? Nah. And then they just went to that old school move. And they did that twice. And you said they had it set up to create some deception. And there wasn't any deception. They did the exact same thing twice. And it was the most simple version. There was no A runner, B runner. It was like, this guy's getting the ball. Shit, we've done it twice and we've got no other plan.
I could have sworn that second time that they were going to do the bit where everyone puts their arm under their jersey so it looks like the ball, and they just scatter off.
Taniela Tupou did that. I don't know. Did you guys?
No, I don't think I did.
And
I think I missed
it. The try got disallowed for it, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it was it Barbarians or was it like Australia versus?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And the referee just said, I hate that. Don't do that.
It's so good to see that.
And all the rest of the other 14 players are putting their arms up their jumpers, pretending that they had the ball.
Yeah, awesome stuff.
The other move we used to run when I was in like under 15s, 16s, was a move we called pivot, where everyone lined up behind each other, and the fly-off would call either, you know, like an odd number or an even number, and if it was an odd number, you all ran left. If it was an even number, you all ran right. Stood right behind the scrum, and you never called it in a game, and it never worked in training. Yet we used to bring it out to practice it regularly because it was one of our like free moves that they come up with.
That stuff like part of the fun, though, right? I bet you've never talked about ultimate frisbee on your podcast. But I played it for one competition for our uni, and we had one move. And I'm sorry, this was Revenge of the Nerds. Like everyone that played on the other teams were nerds and knew and were really good. And we were like a team that was going to play footy and then decided, no, let's play European handball. And we had no idea. And we were just calling out things like sniper on the roof. Everyone falls to the ground. You just try to throw it from a long way out. One person sprints through and those trick sort of plays. Never worked that.
Oh, man. If only. Ultimate Frisbee, I've played it like maybe once or twice. It's surprisingly great, isn't it? It's one of those things that sounds like it should be nothing, but it's good.
It was really fun. Like, we've done it plenty of times at footy training, but it's when everyone has no clue what's going on. But as soon as you verse a team that knows what's going on, it's not as enjoyable.
It reminds me, when I was in school at some point, they did some big sports day thing, like between several schools, where they just assigned everyone a sport at random. And I was the only boy on our lacrosse team, on like the mixed lacrosse team. I had no idea what lacrosse was the morning when I woke up. But by the evening, I was pretty sure I was trying out for the Olympic team. Like, I was incredible at lacrosse. And I've never played it again since. I never want to. Like, that's my one time. Really good at lacrosse.
You got drafted into a cup final and scored a hat-trick by accident.
We made the final and I scored a hat-trick, yeah. And no one was even congratulating me. Everyone was just like, yeah, fair enough. You know, that's what he does. He's that good.
That's pretty good.
No, fair play.
My proudest sporting achievement.
The hat-tricks, yeah. Actually, I've got something for that as well. Yeah. I've got a couple of segues ready. No. So I was talking about set pieces before and the fact that clearly Russia didn't want to take them. Did you guys notice with about 9 minutes to go, they brought on Matveev, their reserve hooker, to play at flanker when they were defending a 5 meter scrum and they turned the ball over?
Yes.
Fair play.
Yeah, yeah.
The Wallabies had the ball, they looked dominant, and then it just twisted, bowled out the side, and Russia picked it up and managed to keep them out about 9 minutes from time. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
also, like, Siafianga was on the bench for the Wallabies covering Loosehead. So today was clearly just the day of playing hookers out of position.
So he comes on, but Pelota now doesn't.
Yeah.
So they kind of cover. And again, Wilgenia doesn't. They're kind of keeping those guys fresh.
Is that not the weirdest bench you've ever seen? Like, you've got two hookers.
Very strange, yeah. Up.
Well, personally, I think picking Nick Phipps as a reserve winger was genius because the guy can't pass. So what better position for him than on the wing?
I genuinely think he's played about as many test caps on the wing for the Wallabies as he has at scrum half, because the amount of times that they had to just leave Wilgenia on the pitch for the 80 minutes, but somebody else has got off injured, and Nick Phibbs has done okay playing there.
He's better than his, yeah.
He scored that one great try against the All Blacks, I always remember playing on the wing. It was a brilliant finish, and you went, why isn't he doing this all the time?
Yeah.
Why isn't he playing on the wing instead of trying to pass the ball and pissing on bars?
Yeah, and throwing people's boots.
Yeah. Which I like. That's the moment where he looked like a scrum half.
Yeah.
That's the only time he ever looked like a professional standard scrum half.
I think, that's definitely the best thing he's ever done is throw boots. And they're probably better passes as well.
Yes. It went straight into touch. It was like Ben Young's pass, but...
Speaking of Matveev, the replacement hooker for Russia, there's a point where, and we might as well segue into this try, scored by Vladimir Ostrushko. Alan Quinlan on the commentary says, oh, the two Russian wingers are doing really well, Ostrushko and Matveev. I mean, Simplikavich. And he somehow confused the starting right winger with the replacement hooker.
To be fair, I was blown away by how good they were with their names. You listen to any of the Australian commentators, they haven't learnt the names, let alone worked out how to pronounce them.
Yeah.
I was very impressed.
Yeah. We spoke before about the Grant Nisbet on New Zealand comms, of course, called Jamie Heaslip Rodney Heaslip instead, and we've been trying to figure out where he got that from.
But when I googled it, it's like the name of a tiler in New Zealand, so I think it's just the guy who like does his roof. Like, he probably hired him a couple of years ago and remembers that's the only Heaslip he'd ever met until Jamie Heaslip.
Our Aussie commentators, like, they do it all the time. Like, there's Aussie rugby players in their own country consistently. George Gregan keeps getting them wrong.
Yeah, I was trying to work out who it was. I think it was one of the young wingers for the Waratahs. Every time he plays, George Gregan gets his first name wrong. Or he just doesn't. the guy that made his debut this year. And then how about, what's his name on the Aussie rugby show that keeps saying Argentina?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't even know.
It's better than the Netherlands, mind you. In the Welcome to Country the other week, when they said, oh, this game between the Wallabies and the Netherlands.
Yeah, and one of the other Welcome to Countries, they said, like, it was 2 weeks in a row. It's like, are you just making it up on the spot? Like, pay a little bit more attention. Because it's a great thing to say before the game. It can be awesome, but they're pretty big mistakes.
Yeah.
You were touching on hat-tricks before.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Move on to a hat-trick that was in, or almost a hat-trick that was in this game. Drew Mitchell, just before he scored, like, looked like he broke away for that third try and then just got sniped and fell to the ground and rolled off the field. Pretty hard to see.
Have you guys already talked about Drew Mitchell's ankle injury from before the Rugby World Cup in this year?
No.
No, of course, because he kind of miraculously recovered, didn't he?
Yeah, so he fractured, dislocated his ankle, and I can still picture him with his foot in the air with his ankle at 90 degrees to where it should be just looking at it, screaming. And they showed it on the live coverage and then immediately cut it.
Yeah.
And took him, I reckon he was really, really injury prone, couldn't get his body right for about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
That was in the Super Rugby of 2011. So that was, you know, the start of him working his ass off to get back in and just constantly breaking down. He reckons it took him a couple of years to get right. And he still looks so sharp.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, he plays really well. And again, you wouldn't know. You know, I don't know if he went to the same magical cave in Fiji that N'Holo did in the following World Cup, where the Fijian witch doctor sorted them out. Yeah, but it's
so unfortunate.
I don't know if it must be
that, like,
yeah.
You almost look at it and think like that was the right decision for him to just hobble towards the touchline when he had the ball. And you kind of feel sorry for the Russian, I think it was Vasily Artemyev, the fullback, who had to come and tackle it. You almost feel sorry for him because he almost sympathises with Drew Mitchell, but thinks like, sorry, mate, I'm playing for my country. I've got to put you into touch here.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was Sama, you know, he just would have thrown the ball before he touched. He could have thought about that, maybe.
A minute, try assist.
Nah, he wouldn't get injured. Radiki Sama would never get injured. He is infallible and perfect.
That man is made of kava. That makes you strong.
Speaking of Radiki Sama, and we mentioned the Russian wingers, there was a comment in the pre-match press conference I just want to draw everyone's attention to, that Vladimir Ostrushko, the left winger for Russia, who was obviously the opposite man for Radiki Sama, was asked about this matchup, and he said, I am ready to eat Radiki Sama.
Yeah, lost in translation, maybe.
Was it? But then weren't they saying, like, halfway through the game that the wingers actually swapped wings as well?
Yeah.
So they could put Simpljegovic, if I got his name right, against him because he was a bigger unit. So the bloke that was claiming he was going to eat him literally got moved off his wing.
Because he was probably too scared of him. And either that or it's a great tactical decision to put your young 19-year-old winger up against a big number 8 on the wing on his second cap.
Well, he's double his age.
Yeah.
I mean, there is the other possible theory is that they were worried that he was going to take it too literally and bite him. And they wanted to play with 15 players the whole way. They didn't. They were like, no. He thinks it's his dinner. Don't let him near it.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Good day, you could definitely do that.
So we should talk about Ostrushko's try. So
sure,
Luke
okay.
Just runs the ball out of his 22 after that Russian attack with the wall move, knocks the ball on. Ostrushko gets the ball, steps Adam Ashley Cooper, who is then simultaneously bodied by Ivan Prishchipenko, the Russian tight head prop, and sent miles on the try to be disallowed, but we don't care about that. He steps Adam Ashley Cooper. He then rounds, I think it's Drew Mitchell, and outpaces James O'Connor and Quay Cooper to the Australian try line. And it's just a really good finish. We saw him previously do a similar finish against Italy, and he is just one of those players. I mean, he's gone to have a really good sevens career outside of this, but he's one of those players that, and we have Blaine Scully on, who said that he was just like one of the wingers he least enjoyed tackling in his career. And you can kind of see that here, even with, you know, the Australian players who are used to tackling anybody.
Well, I thought he stepped inside sharp. Nathan
Sharp. Manny Sharp, sorry, yeah.
I was going to say, if it was AAC, that is much better than Sharp.
I was just seeing red after Luke Burgess got completely wiped out trying to make that tackle. So I didn't see what happened after that.
Did you guys see that? Just behind the...
He just sort of goes.
Yeah, I don't know how bad it really was. Like
he got cleaned up.
He kind of ran straight into him, though.
It was no way. Go. That was a great try, like you said.
Yeah,
and I think it probably highlights the level that these guys are at. Yes, they're not able to compete with a tier one nation that's, you know, relatively speaking, at the top of their game, but they're actually excellent athletes. And it probably puts in perspective that if we ran out against them as ourselves, we're going to get done 200-0 without a blink of an eye, you know?
Yeah. You can make all the jokes you like, but at the end of the day, they're very good and they're able to score those kind of tries.
Yeah.
No, it's a huge... And I think there's something, because Russia have just blown their chance to score their first try, and you're kind of thinking, oh, you know, never mind, they're not going to do it. And then they score this wonder try from halfway that kind of like revitalizes the spirit, I think, both in the Russian team and in the crowd and sort of all around. And obviously, you know, Australia then score like four more tries in the next 5 minutes. But there's still, like, there's Alan Quinn, no, sorry, the main commentator, I think it's Simon Ward, the commentator, says, could this be a turning point? And you think, no. No, it is not a turning point.
Well, you never know. Rashkov might have a winning drop goal in him.
Yeah.
You know, he puts that one over to turn the score into 48-8. And you think, right then, Rashkov, you only need about 15 more of those and you're in this game.
Well, we did poke fun at Rashkov for kicking that drop goal, and the commentators made the comment that maybe it was just to try and give them a bit of a boost, so then that way they can kind of give them a little bit of a push in energy and lift their spirits a little bit. They only lost that second half 21-17.
Yeah, like only because of that Berrick Barnes try in the last minute.
That's right. They didn't score from the 49th minute to the 79th minute, the Wallabies.
Yeah, that's loose.
Very impressive from Russia. And I suppose
that
that's
goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's some mind games from Rashkov, isn't it? But
we can narrow the gap to just 51. We'll be back in this.
So Quade Cooper sets up this try for Adam Ashley Cooper, where he sticks it on the outside of his boot while he's completely off balance. And it's a nice finish from Ashley Cooper.
Great
as well.
Finish from Ashley Cooper.
Yeah. He's just the man you want on the end of that kick, isn't he?
That was brilliant. That was in contact, literally leaning backwards to get that foot to ball.
Yeah.
And no one back before, like behind that front defensive line for Russia. And Adam Ashley Cooper is just such a good finisher. He scoops it up and scored.
And because the ball doesn't bounce at all. It doesn't sit up for him at all. It's rolling along the floor. And he managed to actually pick it up and dive that last metre.
It's the sort of kick that you often see people do on penalty advantage that aren't going to come off. Whereas he just does it off the cuff and just thinks, right, we're going to score from this. And it's like a 90%er. And Ashley Cooper finishes it off.
That's just his bread and butter, isn't it? It was a bit of an... I think it was a nutmeg as well. I'm pretty sure he went through someone's legs on that rubbering contact when I watched it from the backside ankle. It's just... But, I mean, that was what was so good to watch about Quade Cooper as well, that bag of tricks that he actually had.
Mm. Yeah.
The Marfu try as well, likewise. Quade Cooper throws a pass, and from the angle you see live, I didn't know how he threw it. I didn't know how he got the ball from his arm into Marfu's, and it took like three angles for me to work out how the ball got into his hands.
And my immediate assumption, at least, was that that pass was probably forward, like just something different. Right about it, but he also had like three or four really nice classy touches before that as well in the phases leading up to it, coupled to James O'Connor. I'm pretty sure James O'Connor just drops one, but it goes backwards, which is he did a lot more of in the second, like throughout that second half. But Quade's just got that ability that no one knows what he's doing. I don't think he knows what he's doing.
No, and, I think that's summed up by there's that quick tap he does for Drew Mitchell's second try, where he gives it to, is it Pocock gives the assist in the end, one of the back rowers? And it looks like a very simple try for Drew Mitchell, which it is in the end, but that's because he's held his width well and Cooper's taken it just as the Russians are falling asleep. And you're right, it's that unpredictable nature for the full 80 minutes that he keeps going, which really makes him good in this game.
His biggest strength was always playing behind a pack going forwards, right? Which in that first half, that's why he looked so good. He disappeared in the second half in the rain when they stopped getting the physical advantage as well.
Yeah.
The other thing is, David Pocock goes off at half time, having scored two tries, which is always one of those kind of dick moves when a forward's on two tries and could get a hat trick. Like, keep them on, let him get it. But suddenly, the fact that, and up until then, every single time Russia took the ball into contact, they were getting turned over by him. And there's one kind of exception to that rule where Russia secure their own ball, they go for a second phase, and Pocock goes in to challenge it. And they just, like, they send like four men on Pocock who completely blow off the ball, and Higginbotham gets in over and steals it. They're paying so much attention to Pocock. They just went, no, we've done it, we've got the ball. And so once Pocock goes off, not only did they lose the attacking throw we mentioned, suddenly they're not winning every single ball. They don't have 100% possession, which is what it was verging on. And again, when you allowed this Australian backline to play off turnover ball for a bit of space, they were so good and would create so much space.
But on top of that, we mentioned, you know, a couple of times now, Rutschkoff, his kicking game turned the game. So not only did the Wallabies not have all the possession, but he had a huge boot on him. And I remember there was one kick from just outside his own 22, which went about 15 metres out in the Wallabies line. And there was another where he put in this big up and under and James O'Connor didn't even get close to catching it. So yeah. I think those two things, as well as the rain, was probably the, you know, the difference in the first half to the second half.
Yeah.
There's another bit just on the, I think it's the Steve Moore show we mentioned, just having mentioned Higgin Buffum, where he throws this incredible, like, Gareth Edwards reverse pass to David Pocock hitting a line inside him. It's good. It's good. And then Pocock makes the break, almost scores, but offloads to Moore, who goes over. I just want to mention that pass, that I've got it written in all caps. What a ball by Higgin Buffum. I haven't got the bye written down because I was excited. But yeah, it's... That was exciting. I also have, for the other slingshot try, just to mention because it's in my notes, just the words McCalman sex try, which is a shop.
Worth noting as well, the Higginbotham, just like often when you see him, when at this point he's playing for the Reds and around the time when they won Super Rugby, just that his sheer skill set was phenomenal. Like, you'd often see him putting in clearance kicks and stuff or chip kicks or whatever, and he did a clearance kick kind of for a laugh in this game. There's a point where they're about 5 yards out and he finds himself at first receiver and just thinks, yeah, this is my chance to do it. We saw Tom Croft kicking the ball out of half time for England in one of the games in this World Cup, and it's often you get that when they're playing against a tier two nation. It's like, no, this is my opportunity to do this. Scrum halves get to do this week in, week out in my league. I want to do this now.
Yeah, super skilled player for sure. Yeah.
Can either of you explain Ben McCalman to us?
Yes. I was hoping you'd ask.
We like him. We like okay. him. You've been harping him, mate.
So I was listening to your pod about the Ireland-Australia game.
Oh, yeah.
And to cast our minds back to this World Cup squad, there was a lot of criticism coming in because Robbie Deans only picked one open side flanker, being David Pocock. So when he couldn't play against Ireland, we had nobody.
It's an ironic problem for Australia, isn't it? Considering where the next few years went, the next two World Cups.
Seriously.
But yeah, sorry, go on.
We had other options. He just didn't pick them. But anyway, Benny McCalman ended up playing at seven. And I remember coming away from that game actually relatively pleased with the fact that he was physical and making a few hits and that kind of thing, because I just didn't think that he should have ever been there in the first place.
Yeah,
right. But, you know, I know you said he had something like 50-odd caps for the Wallabies. He actually fractured his shoulder blade about six times, to the point where it kept refracturing in the same spot and he had to retire because of it. He had a really, really injury-ravaged career, but he was a very good 6'8" that was big and physical at his best. Just was cursed, I think, with a broken, busted shoulder.
Yeah, that's really rough.
Yeah, we probably were a bit hard on him. But all I'm saying is, you probably would have been better off if you'd named Ben McCalman in the team and sent out George Smith in a costume.
That's a gimme. That's a gimme.
Do you think you could just put like a face-off style mask on him? And he could probably... Actually, why would you need to do that? You can just put him out. He can just play anyway. And... I mean, he played for the Wallabies 2 years after this anyway, so...
Yeah. Was Liam Gill a big deal by this point?
No, this is too early. So this is a year before Hooper joined the Wallabies. So we had probably two or three young guys coming through. Hooper, right. Colby Fyinga, who was a brother to the other two Fyingas. I can't think of who the third one was. There's another one similar time, but Liam Gill was a year or two younger.
Right.
I think 1 year younger. So he hadn't really cracked it yet.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And Colby Fyinga, as you say, was a very good player and unlucky. Weirdly, I think of him as the best of the Fyingas, and yet he was the one without the international career.
I thought he was definitely. I thought he was really, really good.
And I think I think he was, before Michael Hooper came through, at the Brumbies, he actually had the starting jersey until he got injured, and then Hooper kind of got that jersey and ran with it. And I remember Nelson and I having this argument for a couple of seasons, just going, he shouldn't be starting over him. There's no way.
I played both of them through, like, up until under 16, 17.
Oh, no way!
And thought Colby was always better.
Right, okay, yeah.
Also thought he was better.
I didn't think
so. what position do you play?
Open side flanker.
Right, okay, yeah. Quiet day at the office then.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
How is that? How is coming up against... So I imagine they were both very good at that age.
They were. I mean, Hooper at that age, 15, 16, was not the player Hooper is now. Like, he's evolved a fair bit.
He made tackles.
Yeah, he did not make tackles back then. All Hooper did at 15 was stand one off the fly half, like inside or outside the fly half, and just destroy people ball in hand. Like, he literally just ran one off the fly half every single time and would just break the line nonstop. So that's where, like, he's always had a running game to him. He never seemed, although he was rock solid, he had always a perfect attitude to become a professional player. Yeah. I remember we were doing a tournament in Queensland, and everyone's up sort of just frothing on the fact that you're somewhere playing rugby and he's in bed at 7 o'clock at night. Guys, leave me alone. I've got footy to play tomorrow kind of thing. He was always destined with his attitude, and they picked him and Colby Feingold at that age group, saying that they're going to make it.
Yeah. Do you have any like claims to fame? Did you ever like turn him over? Did you ever get a good shot on him?
If you ask Benny Voliva from the Fiji side, we played a game together against Michael Hooper, and possibly my best game of my life. All I did, literally went to sleep, and woke up in the morning, was thinking, all I'm going to do is smash Hooper and stand one off the ruck. Didn't worry about anything else in the game, and literally just shot in at him and hit him constantly. And as far as I remember, I did well. People said I did well, but he kicked me in the head here, and I had 10 stitches, 6 months short-term memory loss. And,
wow.
Yeah, so I think he won.
Yikes. At least you remember it as the best game of your career.
At least you remember it. End of. Yeah.
I think I remember the lead up to it. And then I've had so many chats to guys in the team. I ended up getting picked for like the Sydney side afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think I remember it being a good game mainly from other people saying it. Like,
right.
Yeah.
It scarred me for sure. That
you can call this the Hooper Trash Talk podcast now.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is, right, I doubt that was Michael Hooper's best game of his life, but it was yours. So
yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. Who's the winner here?
Bigger things, and I did not.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of the head injury. It was the head injury's fault. That's what I'll blame it on.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. You went off and then you said, oh, it's that cliche of, he's gone off, he's forgotten who he is. That's great. Tell him he's George Smith and send him back on.
Yeah. That would have been good. I went back on and just bled everywhere, I think, pretty much.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah, that's a very good anecdote.
I love that. Yeah.
None of us have any better.
Smash him.
Yeah. Yeah. I once played against a guy who now plays for Sale Sharks on the wing. That's like as much as I can offer to that.
Yeah.
Like,
how did that go?
Pretty badly. He was playing in the centre, I was playing on the wing. And safe to say, when he arced outside our access centre, I just drifted onto the winger. It's fine. I wasn't opening up the gap. I was just drifting in case he passed it. That's all.
Yeah, of course. Let him inside you. Safer move.
Yeah, yeah.
You just reminded me, I was talking before about how the Russians would just eat us alive as rugby players. And a good friend of mine, who I was in the second 15 through school, he was as the inside centre above me in the age grade, and ended up playing New South Wales first team. And he played a fair few years for Malta as their star player.
Wow.
And I just remember him being so much better than me at rugby.
Yeah.
And yet he was playing for Malta. And I don't think anyone's ever seen Malta play. So it really puts it in perspective for me.
So I know someone that also played for Malta that won like 10 caps in Malta. I met him when I was in Belgium last year. And so, I mean, yeah, he played for Malta a bit. He now plays in like the Belgian first division, which he says is actually quite a surprisingly high standard of rugby. But, you know, like, that's the standard. You've got a lot of people that have played for whatever their smaller nation is. Across there.
Yeah.
But is the best story I heard from him was that one day he woke up and he'd missed a call from his mate, so he rang him back. And his mate said, sorry, we've only got 12 people for the rugby league today. Do you fancy playing? He said, I've never played rugby league before. And he went, great, okay, no, just come along. And he turned up and it was an international. Oh. So he thought he was going to play a local game, but he turned up and won an international cap for Malta, despite having never played rugby league before. Just because he was quite good at union, they went, Give him a go. Give him a go. He'll be fine.
I've got a similar anecdote, which was that the team I play for, Long Eaton Rugby Club, went on tour a year or two ago to Estonia, of all places, which isn't a very known place for rugby. And they went out and got very, very drunk. I sadly wasn't on this tour. I couldn't make it this year. But they went out and got very, very drunk the night before the game they were playing. And then turned up, and 90 minutes before kickoff, they were told they were playing the national team.
Oh. How did they go?
I think we only lost, it was really high scoring. I think it was like 46-54 or something, which is pretty good for a bunch of, you know, pissed up mid-Englanders against the Estonian national team. Yeah, especially say it's a tour and, you know, half the people are probably playing out of position or whatever. So, yeah, that's better than I expected it to go when I first heard people, you know, texting me before kickoff saying, all right, playing the national team, see you later.
The other one I always find really interesting is that Madagascar, rugby union is their national sport.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Another country I just don't think anyone's ever seen or heard of a single player from there.
Yeah. You see the old photo of their stadiums just packed out with like 40,000 people in these tiny stadiums watching, you know, like roaring, watching them play against whoever. I desperately want them to play in the World Cup.
Years ago.
Oh, really?
For my honeymoon, and I saw these fields. I'm like, what? Talking to the locals, like, what's that? Like, that's massive. Everything else, you know, nothing's developed. It's just a footy oval. They absolutely love it.
Amazing.
I as soon as I found out that it was their national sport, it might have been, you know, back in 2011 or something. I've just had this little part of me that I just hoped they scraped into the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah,
like, me just too. Be such a good story for Madagascar to be playing at a Rugby World Cup. And I feel like they haven't been that far off on a few occasions. Like, we've got Germany getting in, Spain getting in, things like that. And some of the qualifying matches, I think they've come relatively close. Yeah. I've just flicked across to their Wikipedia page. So to put things in perspective, was it 2003 that Australia beat Namibia by 140 or something?
Yeah, I think so.
The year before that, Namibia beat Madagascar 112-0. It could have been bad.
They're close. They're really close.
But a couple of years after that, Madagascar then beat Zambia 97-3.
Yeah, we can keep going down. I could play for Zambia. Oh, that's
safe
to
say.
That's where we cut in. Yeah.
I reckon Namibia were only about 90 drop goals away from beating the Wallabies.
That's it. Pretty close.
Oh, I sometimes wonder this, of like how, if you look at the teams in like 96th in the world rankings, right, how far am I as someone that plays touch once a week of qualifying to play for them, you know, of being good enough to get the odd game on the wing?
One of my mates has played, he's got two caps for Serbia. For the record, so that's, I think they're about 50th in the world rankings, so that gives a bit of scope, and he was like knocking on the door of our first team, so
Serbia ranked 88th.
Right, okay. I clearly just wanted to do that well.
Yeah, I've got a mate who plays for Lao, and I can't find him in the top 100, so that would be a team that we could probably crack.
Is he any good though?
Okay. You could check whereabouts Estonia are in the world rankings. Give them some scope for their level.
Yeah, they're not.
They're sure they are.
They're not there. No, I take it Long Eaton Rugby Club aren't on there either.
Just under Ghana. Yeah, just under
Ghana.
The other thought is, if you just dropped David Pocock into a team ranked outside the top 100, how good would they be? if he played... Well, if he'd played for Zimbabwe and he'd been as good as he was playing for the Wallabies, would they have made a World Cup, you know, or would they have taken a scalp or something? Because they'd have been battering any team at that level just with him.
Wasn't the beast born there as well?
Yeah. The team Zimbabwe could have had was mad. They could have had Ngwenya and Shivanga on the wings. Yeah, the beast was born there.
You get like Premiership players like Mike Williams and Dave Ewers are both born there.
You send Maratoja can play for Nigeria.
Will Genia for Papua New Guinea.
Yes, like his brother did.
Yeah.
You can have this hugely competitive, like, African Cup.
Like a state of origin kind of thing. Even though it's not quite state of origin, it's just play for the less good team that you're qualified for.
Shall we wrap up any points we have on other tries? Anything else you want to bring up from this game before we move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
I mean, the only other thing I really wanted to talk about was like this schoolboy James O'Connor that was coming across from Western Force. He was lightning quick when he hit the line from fullback, and he was just so exciting in that first half. And then you just saw this like this turn in his game when it started to rain and he didn't really want to be there anymore because all his mates had come off at halftime and he just fell apart. Knocked on, I think, about three passes, made Rob Simmons look like he could handle properly. Missed that up and under that I talked about before as well. That player was just encapsulating the Wallabies' inconsistency in one right there.
He really kicked impressively, I thought, in this game. Like, I think it was before the match, he was 5 from 8. Then he missed his first kick. And then he got his next 9 kicks in a row. And most of them were from the sideline. Like, it was pretty impressive. So no matter how bad his hands turned in that match, he was still able to kick it from anywhere.
Yeah. It's only been in the last 12 months he started really kicking for goal again for Australia and for the Reds.
Yeah.
And the last couple of points would be just the Simplikavich try, which was obviously the interception from Cooper, which he takes very well and reads very well. In hindsight, it's a very stupid pass from Quaid, and it's almost an arrogant pass, just kind of assuming that the pass is going to beat Simplikavich on the outside, and he just thinks, no, I'm having this.
I think it was, if the ball got out Simplikavich, it would have been try time. It was like 3-on-1, but he's just super tall. Wasn't he like 6'4" or something? Just reaches out above his head and pulls that ball in.
I thought he took it pretty easy. I think he hit the nail on the head, Will. It was an arrogant pass.
Yeah. But
Quade Cooper has this tactic, I think, where he's throwing the ball, he throws the ball at a hole and then expects his player to get there. And he's normally fuming when he does it and someone's not in the right spot. And I think this was a case of him doing that. He thought he could get the ball past the outside shoulder and was a bit cocky. So he took that risk and kind of made him look pretty stupid, to be honest.
Yeah. And then the other Russian try was, of course, the Rashkov one. We touched on the Beric Barnes one. But the Rashkov try where he runs a nice line off the replacement scrum half, Shakirov, off the back of a maul. And it's not really the sort of line you often see us fly half running, which is very effective against a tired defence.
And that's the Wallabies line defence, which is still a problem. Like, still the Wallabies today, anytime someone's hitting one out or two out on line attack, I never have confidence that the Wallabies have the ability to stop them. It's just not our game to be that imposing team. And Russia, you know, by that point, I think they were probably riding high on a pretty dominant second half where they were really playing quite well for the conditions. So, it was not overly surprising, to be honest, at that point where he went over, which just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that happens is it does just start absolutely belting it down in the second half. The rain pours down and it has a big impact that suddenly, you know, people are just falling over. Suddenly it's so much more difficult to handle the ball. It's even more difficult to handle Riddiki Samo than it was before. He's completely unaffected, but everyone else around him is.
Well, I mean, as you said, the Fijians just love to throw the ball around. Even in the wet weather, they're out there throwing around. In Australia, if it's sprinkling, the council closes the grounds. You don't get to play rugby.
Yeah.
Like, it's only occurred to me recently how rubbish we normally play in the wet weather. It's probably because we just never do it. never held a wet footy. Like, it's ridiculous.
You never get used to it until you're playing at the highest possible level where you can't get it.
Why do you think England are so good in the wet?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It should be Scotland's specialty.
Yeah.
But it was for a long time. You look at that the year before this, that game against the Wallabies, where you couldn't walk for the rain. The game was basically played in an ocean centre. Matt Gitter misses that kick in the last minute to win it, when the entire way it's just been because Scotland are so... This is like a normal Thursday for Scotland. But Austria are like, why is the water falling from the sky?
What is this?
Yeah. Speaking of Matt Gitter, he doesn't get selected for this Rugby World Cup by Robbie Deans, which is obviously a massive thing in itself, and then gets called back by Czech to come and play in the 2015 Rugby World Cup as one of our best players.
Yeah.
Like, do we have any more justification that he should have been there?
Because he kind of got shit-canned for the Samoa game. Like, he kind of bore the brunt of it. Yeah, he was the scapegoat. And he wasn't bad in it. Like,
realistically, he was probably the best player in that game.
Yeah, he looked... big issues with Robbie Deans. I think there started to be some big fractures in their side, and the players started to be pretty unhappy with him. And I think that was probably, you know, one of those big things that made people realize, like, why are you getting rid of our best player? It makes no sense whatsoever. We didn't necessarily need more flair. He had a control over that back line that I reckon none of the other guys did as well.
Yeah.
Good to see there.
Yeah. Because he sent... No.
Sorry, the last name I wanted to bring up, if you look at the Russian side, I think there's like one or two names that do not have a V in there. Adam Bynes. He was from our school. Like, he was just an Aussie bloke that ended up playing for Russia. I went to like a school, like 50 years or whatever it was of rugby thing a couple of years back. And he was just there chatting, like, thick Aussie accent. Just went, yeah, I played for Russia. It just made no sense.
That's incredible.
He was out from us.
I remember the nickname Adam Burnsovsky catching on after he played for Russia. And I always think of him as that now.
Yeah, I think he needed an Ofsky or something in the end.
Well, when we all play for Estonia, I'm sure that they're going to give us nicknames of a similar ilk.
Well, our best bet's the Netherlands, but I think they're too good. Like, our Nana's...
Yeah, they're playing the Rugby Championship.
Exactly. No, I think they're far too good for us.
They're ranked 25th. They're one below Namibia. Mm. We're not going to get anywhere near that team.
No.
Wow, yeah. Yeah. There must be just an army of other Vissers out there. And Josh Van der Vliet is extended.
How do we not have more locks coming out of the Netherlands?
Yep. No, yeah. Mm. I met someone at the World Cup last year who had played... He had one cap for the Netherlands. He was 6'11", and you went, I get why you have your cap. I understand this. I ended up playing touch rugby with him in the square in Oita, the day before Wales played Fiji.
Yeah,
Fiji. Yeah, it was fun, and he was a hashtag unit, I believe is the phrase.
Sounds it. Definitely sounds it. That's a big boy.
Right. Should we do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
You took the words right out of my mouth. Should we start with Man of the Match?
Sure. Right. Do you boys want to start?
Yeah. I thought, for me, Luke Burgess was absolutely exceptional. And in a game where we were just running amok in attack, he was kind of the center of a lot of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, I thought he was best on par.
Yeah.
For me, I know he only played half a game of rugby, but so did the Wallabies. So I went for David Pocock.
Yeah.
He was just brilliant with the ball in hand, brilliant in defence. And as we touched on before, they really missed him when he came off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quade Cooper's one person I've written down, but then there was the gift try that he gave to Simplikavich as well. And so I'm going to side with you, Nelson, and say I'm going to give it to David Pocock. I think that... He took his two tries well, offloaded that one to Stephen Moore really well, and was a nuisance at breakdown time. I feel like he gave the Wallabies that platform to run away with the game.
Yeah, I thought Pocock was outstanding. I enjoyed Quade Cooper enormously. But we're going to have the same thing of a similar brother split, and I'm going to go for Luke Burgess.
Huh.
We haven't mentioned him, but I thought Luke Burgess was fantastic.
He was brilliant.
All regards, other than that offload in that leads off the knock on, rather the offload to Simplikavich, Ostrushko, for that try.
The saving tackle.
Yes, the one mistake he made came after making a 50-meter break. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good result. That's a pretty good turnout for the game. You know, you've done all right there.
I was going to say he made so many good darts off the breakdown as well. Simple dummy, the prop jumps across and just sprints straight through for 40 metres. He was awesome.
He was doing good darts and that without having like the Gareth Davis problem of not being able to pass as well, you know, or not assessing his options. Like, he was accurate decision-making and a really good snipe person.
I always
rate them very highly, but then he kind of, you know, he went to Treviso as their kind of big money signing. And I think once you've signed for Benetton, it kind of... There are certain clubs, if you sign for them, it kind of taints your career almost.
Yeah.
And he was kind of then seen as, oh, he's massively dropped off, rather than actually he went to this club that was looking like they were on and up as their big money signing. And it's a shame. But yeah, I always rate them enormously highly. Dick of the Day. Should we do Dick of the Day?
Sure. Where should we start? Do you want me to start?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. So, I mean, one person, as I mentioned, Quade Cooper is a standing item as a potential dick of the day. However, I'm going to give it to James O'Connor because, as you mentioned earlier, Harry, there was the point where Kushnirev does the crossfield kick and James O'Connor just gets nowhere near it. And then he is faced with just the two pacemen, the Russian props, Sergei Popov and Ivan Prishchenko. O'Connor then drops the ball and deliberately falls over to spare the embarrassment of a foot race with Sergei Popov, who sadly hacks the ball into touch on the fall. But that's not what matters. So James O'Connor, for being a coward and backing out of a foot race with some props, is my dick of the day.
I had James O'Connor down as a possibility because the first thing that happens in the game, well, second thing that happens in the game, off a scrum, he's given the ball and he has Radiki Salma outside him and he doesn't give it to him. And everyone's paid their money. Everyone's tuned in to see Radiki Salma play on the wing against Russia. Give him the ball. Let him run. But he then kind of makes up for it by just giving him the ball lots of times later on.
Yeah.
So I kind of...
There's a point where he ignores Ashley Cooper inside him who would have scored because he knows people are paid to see Tsamo have a run down the wing. And I love that. That's like positive shithousery.
So instead, my dick of the day is someone who will not come up. It is the most controversial thing to do in any Australia game in this World Cup. Bryce Lawrence, the referee. Who, as I say, doesn't come up, won't be talked about in future Australia games in this World Cup. Not at all. So there's two things he does. One is the very first thing that happens in the game is Russia kick off and Simplikavich is slightly in front of the kicker and he blows it for the scrum to Australia, which is so pedantic.
Yeah.
And considering, that happens all the time. No one ever blows for it. But this time against a tier two nation who are about to concede 50 points and a half. And I know you shouldn't judge it on whatever, but you should kind of know that's where this is going.
Yeah.
And he blows that. And then in the second half, it's Yanyushkin is stopped just short and one of the Russian forwards, I lost track of who, then dives over and he gives it as held up despite the fact the try would have been scored.
Yeah.
If he just let it play instead of blowing super early. So between the two moments, Bryce Lawrence, the referee, was my dick of the day in a moment that will not be repeated.
Robbie, yeah. I'm genuinely shocked you've not given Anthony Fayenga dick of the day in this game.
I know.
He's not playing. This is the first Australia game in this World Cup where you've not given him dick of the day.
I thought about it, but he's current... At this point
you literally
in time,
gave him
injured.
Dick of the day for scoring against the USA.
But, right. No, I mean, I don't know if I need to justify this again, but if he... Never mind. He tried to blow the try and he accidentally scored. It was an incredible moment. But yeah, Bryce Lawrence narrowly pips Antfinger to man of the match.
If that try, if he just waited that extra moment and they went right and scored that try, they were only, 12 drop goals away? Like, he could have.
It's tragic, isn't it? Honestly. Or maybe even two going by Rashkov's scoring system.
Yeah.
Dick of the days for you two. Any nominations?
Mine's probably going to sound rough, but it's Yuri Turniketi Koreshnev or Merev, because if he didn't start, Rashkov could have started, and he was awesome for them.
Yeah.
If he was on that field earlier, kicking the ball like he was, I reckon it would have been pretty good. Yeah. And the turnstile definitely did not put his body in the line. At one point, I think it was the Drew Mitchell try, he went to make a tackle and instead took out his own player. No, it was the Pocock try. Took out his own player that probably was going to make the tackle. Pretty cool.
Oh, man. That's rough. Yeah. And finally...
I'm going to side with Will. James O'Connor, despite being 13 years old and having tiny hands, when that rain came out, the amount of times he went into contact and just threw the ball forwards, like he wasn't dropping it down. It was going 2 meters ahead of him.
Yeah.
It was absolutely ridiculous. And like I said, it's everything I hate about Australian rugby, that you can have these guys that have such flair, but just absolute inconsistency and a lack of composure. So that was dick of the day for me.
Yep. Hello. Yeah, hard to argue with. So that pretty much brings us through the game itself. We will I think very quickly, this is Russia's last game of the World Cup. So we have been, for each team's final game, doing a little like leaving party and looking back on them and what they've brought and what they've achieved in the thing. I should have queued up some Russian music by now.
Yes, please do.
I am quickly typing Russian music.
As we say, Russia, which is apparently vodka, goodbye. Right? In Russia. Right? Oh, nice.
Yeah, straight vodka.
Yeah. And I'll say, so is this as well, this glass of clear liquid that I've been sipping the whole way through this episode.
That could be butter as well.
If anyone's hit the description of the first thing that comes up when you type Russian music into Apple Music, this comes under the category of Russian hip-hop. It says, there's always something new in the land of Russian language bops, with rappers quick to deliver gritty vox and punchy bass lines. Eclectic and bold, this playlist follows the latest from heavy hitters and new talent across CIS and beyond. So this is what we're hearing now.
Heavy hitters, we can rule out Yuri Kushnarev. So yeah, Russia, genuinely quite a delight to watch them at this World Cup.
Yeah.
And they scored a lot of tries, and, you know, them scoring 3 tries against the Wallabies is much more positive result than they probably expected this World Cup. I think for me, the standout players were Vasily Artemyev as an obvious point, and Denis Simplikavich coming in as a 19-year-old scoring tries against both Ireland and in Australia on his first 2 caps. It's a hell of a result.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think their entire back three were very good. We didn't get to see Igor Klichnikov in this game as well, who was a massive nails fullback, which I'm always a massive fan of any fullback who likes to just take the ball and just run in a straight line right back at the defensive line. And he was that kind of guy, you know, had a beard, bald head, all of it. I'm not meaning to describe any guest as cast aspersions, so I realise that as I'm saying it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I enjoyed him enormously. And I think actually both their hookers were good.
Yeah.
Both their hookers sort of really put themselves about. And it was one of those odd things that sometimes happen with Tier 2 Nations where they'll have two really good players in the same position. They have to kind of take turns when some of the players are not up to scratch.
Just play one at flanker.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's the way around it. It's a shame they only caught on to that with 10 minutes to go at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Finally cracked it. They were
very impressive. You know, the game against the USA as well, where they almost scraped a win. Mm. Like it's a genuinely close game.
And I
loved hearing them say before kickoff in the game against the Wallabies that they were there to actually attack and to try and score tries, because you're not going to win a game without scoring tries. Like, how good is that to come into a World Cup when you know you're a massive underdog and you're genuinely just saying, we're not here to defend, we're going to try and put some points on. And they did.
Yeah.
Did you hear how they described their style of rugby before this World Cup? It said they play more like Fiji or France. It's all about their flair, and that is backing up. Like, they just want to go for tries and have a bit of fun.
Yeah,
it's great to see them flinging the ball around.
Good on them.
Yeah, and it's that complete other approach. You see a lot of underdogs will try and just keep the score down. You know, we'll do kind of the rugby equivalent of parking the bus. They'll kick the ball a lot, or they'll just kind of, like Tonga did in the World Cup last year, where they just pick and goes a lot and just kept holding the ball so that the opposition couldn't have it and couldn't score tries. And, you know, it's kind of a masterclass tonight against England by Tonga, but they still... Sorry, by Tonga against England. But it still led to, you know, they weren't going to go anywhere. They weren't going to win games like that.
You can't win.
The one other guy I want to mention is Yanyushkin, the scrum
half. Yeah, I was going to say, he's my man. I love him.
Smallest guy at the World Cup.
5'5".
Wow.
He didn't know it.
No, he was great. Like, he was a very, very small man, and it helped him. It was not a negative thing for him. It was good for him.
Yeah. I really liked him. If I had to pick a dick of the tournament, I don't think I have one, but it would probably be Kushnarev for missing that tackle on Pocock. But yes, let's go back to praising Yanyushkin, because I love him.
Yeah. And, I mean, this... you can almost nominate man of the tournament being Rashkov for dropping a goal when 15 points behind.
It's a ballsy move.
Because that's the kind of... Exactly. Like, there's a massive big ball's confidence of this will be the decider late on. We're going to look back on this. And also, just that's the kind of energy I want more of. Sorry, go on.
To be fair, I feel like he's basically Johnny Sexton.
he thought he was... Johnny Wilkinson at that point.
He's definitely
calling him Sexton's a bit harsh on him.
That's fair.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us. Where can people find you? Where can people find the pod? Where can people find you on social medias, etc.?
Yeah, so we've got a fantasy platform that ran a beta this year and should have a fully fledged platform for 2021 for Super Rugby for Aotearoa and AU. So that's at draftrugby.com. And then we are also insanely active over Twitter, especially at Draft Rugby. And you'll find us Instagram, Facebook, and pretty much anywhere. We run podcasts and bits and pieces as well. So pretty much everything and everywhere.
We've had about... I think two podcasts that have had more than 10 listens. And there was someone else on this podcast on both of those. So thank you.
It's a pleasure. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. No, it is a huge pleasure to do both times. I've enjoyed it both times. No, it's been great. So thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to everyone.
Cheers, boys. I've really enjoyed this. This has been a nice chat. And when we do other World Cups, I'd love to have you back to talk about the Wallabies more.
Yeah, sure, awesome. Boys. We've loved it.
Thanks cheers. For having us, guys. Good to meet you all.
No, cheers. And thank you to everyone listening. Join us next time. Oh, no, we've got a Christmas special in between.
We have got a Christmas special, yes.
Where we found three YouTube clips from rugby things that happened in 2011, and we're going to try and cover those instead of a game. It may include a championship team, as in the English second division, who tried to go for Christmas number one and launched a single. We'll be covering that next time, and then after that, when we return to the World Cup proper, we'll be looking at a game that I think people do remember. France played Tonga.
Yeah, and easy win for France. Easy win for France.
Should be. You know, there's no way, considering this France team goes on to play in a final, there's no way they could possibly lose to Tonga there.
Look, Tonga would need a lot of drop goals.
All right, cheers. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time. Good night.
Good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.